Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Anna's Journey here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your show's host, Anna Renault, and I'm really excited to have our guest with us today, and I'll be bringing her online with us in just a moment. I see she's been sitting here on hold, and it's really great to be back on the air after taking a very long vacation. Some of it was vacation, some of it was sick leave, but whatever. It's been an awesome couple of months since I've been on the air, until just about 2 or 3 days ago, and reactivated the show. I'm really looking forward to a very active, very interesting 2017. So let me get to my computer here and click the microphone and bring our guest on the line with us. Good morning. How are things in California?
They're going great. It's a little rainy, but it's really nice to have some water here.
Very good. So you want to tell people who you are and just real briefly what you do, and then we'll jump right into the show and talk about the fact that we do talk and say things that really do impact our children and each other.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me. It's really nice to have the opportunity to have this discussion. But my name is Dali, and I have a blog. I call it Dali Talks, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter. And my purpose of blogging is to bring different stories to people. And one of the most important type of stories that I'd like to bring to light are that of embracing differences. So I created a program, and it's geared more towards children, parents, and teachers or educators to help children understand that it's okay to have differences regardless of what they are, and that we need to use appropriate language, because a lot of times we have, you know, accidental words or actions that might hurt other people's feelings, or that might seem that they are ill-intended. So that's what I do right now, and I'm loving it because I've had a pretty good response for it, you know.
Well, that's really good to hear that you're having a good response, because certainly here in America right now, there are all kinds of things going on, especially within the political realm, in terms of accepting people with differences. And again, certainly here in America, we have probably the largest, biggest group of differences that I've ever come across. I mean, we certainly have people that have come here from all different countries. We all are in different walks of life, and we are who we are, and we have to respect who we are and who others are.
That's right.
So how did you get into this? What made you decide to develop Embracing Differences?
Well, I started volunteering at my kids' school when they were in preschool. And I started noticing things that, and I was shocking, because these things I thought I wouldn't have to deal with until they were much, much older. And I'll never forget one occasion, there were some little boys and girls sitting at a table, and they had to choose where they wanted to go and play. And all of the little girls ran off to the little kitchen area, all the little boys ran off to, like, the building area, and one little boy came over to the kitchen area, and the rest of the boys were kind of shocked. And this is, I think they were about four years old or so, and the boy started teasing him because he went over to the kitchen area, and he was like, oh, you're a girl, you want to play with girls in the kitchen. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here? He's four, you know, and then these other little boys clearly understood that stereotype of, you know, this is for boys and this is for girls. And it made me really, really sad. And then over the years, you know, I've been more involved in schools and, you know, things related with kids. And I kept seeing it over and over and over. And the one that really, really just crushed my heart was one occasion where I was in the classroom and I saw a little boy in the corner, kind of like close to the teacher's desk. And I asked the table where I was sitting with some kids, and it was about six kids, boys and girls mixed together. And I asked, what's going on over there? Why is that child over there? And they said, oh, that's so-and-so. He's bad. I said, really? Well, what makes him bad? And they said, well, he never listens. And I said, well, maybe he just has, a hard time or he gets bored. And they're like, no, he's bad, bad. And I thought, he probably was one of those kids who had a hard time listening and following directions. But the fact that the children saw him as the bad kid was a stigma already there that I could clearly see. Because I went over to the kid and I had a little chat with him, and he was struggling with some math. And he said, I don't get it. And he was kind of giving up on himself. And I said, well, yeah, you can, I'll help you out. And he said, no, I'm never good at anything. Just ask anybody in here. And
wow.
And that was horrible because, we don't know what these kids are going through at home. There are some, outstanding parents who dedicate all of their time to helping with homework. And then there are some parents who feel that they can just do it on their own. And some parents who just don't have the time because, today we have, a household of mom and dad are most likely both working. So that time with your child is reduced versus, maybe the way that you and I grew up or our parents. We had at least one parent at home and we had more help. But these observations really, bothered me because I know that every child has a potential to be wonderful, to be great. And I just started creating this program, and I decided to call it Embracing Differences because what I saw wasn't just about race or about gender or about, the differences in physical, limitations or abilities. And I saw all of that. I can probably give you an example of every single one that I've chosen. And when I ask kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? They're like, oh, I want to be a nurse, or, a little boy will chime in like, you can't be that because that's not what boys do or that's not what girls do. So these conversations are out there. The children are talking. And I've heard a lot of adults say, we don't need to teach kids about gender differences or about, for boys and what's for girls and we don't need to correct that idea because they don't really understand, discrimination, but clearly they do, and a lot of times these situations are seen as just a phase of childhood. And unfortunately they're not just phases of childhood. And I'll give you an example. A little boy was playing in the yard and during recess with a girl, and the girl got very aggressive and she hit him hard. So, the rule is you go and you tell the recess monitor when somebody's done something like that to you. And the recess monitor, she just brushed it off and she said, well, just stop crying about it and just get away from her and move on. But had that been a little boy hitting a little girl, unfortunately, the little boys usually punish much harder because, in society, we teach boys don't hit girls. And then people joke about, oh, this girl slapped his boy because he did that or whatever. And it's kind of more acceptable. And I feel like that is an inequality, to both boys and girls.
Well, let's talk about a couple of things, because one of the big things you just said is the fact that there are these adults, including teachers, who do not feel that we need to correct the gender differences. And the fact that maybe to them they think it's a phase of childhood, but how many of those impressions that these children have gotten as early as pre-K and maybe even before that at home, that this is what girls do, this is what boys do. And you talked about this little boy going over to the kitchen to play.
Mm-hmm.
To be teased about that is certainly not nice. But then when you think about when they get older, how many of the greatest chefs in the world are men, not girls, in the kitchen?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't it okay for the boy to go to the kitchen? I can remember growing up, my dad cooked, my dad baked. We loved it when he made his homemade noodles or when he made bread. Now, he worked in a steel mill all week, but that did not prevent him from spending his share of time in the kitchen, especially on weekends, because, again, as you mentioned, sometimes both parents worked. When my mother was a school teacher, Saturdays for her, quite often, was correcting papers. So Dad took over taking care of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And we all saw that, and we all thought it was normal. We were amazed quite often when we found out that other fathers didn't do that. It was like, what do you mean your father doesn't cook? Your father doesn't. Oh, no, you know, my mother's in the kitchen, my father's in the basement, whatever, in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but there's nothing wrong with him helping out in the kitchen. You know, it was something that he liked to do. I have to admit, there were a few things he cooked for dinner that we weren't really happy with.
Mm-hmm.
But he, most of the time, I would say 9 out of 10 times, whatever he cooked was very good. He just happened to like turnips and a few things that I wish had never come into the house. But when you think about it, you know, we were watching some kind of cooking show on TV and they were talking about all these, you know, famous French chefs and whatever, and they were all men. And we're sitting there saying, well, what's so unusual about that? Dad cooks, Dad bakes. It's a shame that, one, the teacher didn't pick up on that teasing. And you don't know, he, that little boy might become one of the next best chefs. I don't know how much of it was the influence of my father, but I was married to a man for 10 years, Dennis. He was a great cook. He had worked part-time in a restaurant. He definitely cooked better than I did. So when he wanted to cook, I let him.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, the deal was he cooked, I cleaned up. Well, once I found out that he used every pot and pan and dish and everything in sight to make whatever he was, you know, producing, which was always great, I wasn't about to clean up all that mess. It was like, you cook, you clean. When I cook, I'll clean, you know. And really kind of taught him how to do that a little bit better. But, you know, we really do need to look at these gender differences because there are some men out there who have really great talents that maybe never do get developed because of this pre-existing discrimination. And I don't know that anybody has ever really thought about the fact that's really what it is. We really are discriminating against them because of their physical gender. You know,
well,
we don't do any kind
thing,
of... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but yeah, the other thing is that the majority of the times when we discriminate, because we all do it, we do it subconsciously. And it's because from the moment we are born, we are taught labels and these ideas from society, you know, because when, what do you see when, just before a child is born, you see these gender reveals or sex, baby sex reveals, and you always see pink balloons for a girl if you're having a girl, you know, blue balloons for a boy. So it's already selected. It's like, you know, you're, it's okay to I guess prefer a certain color for the child, but it comes to the point to where children think that that is the default. They think that that is the set rule, not realizing that not all girls like pink and not all boys like blue. And, you know, one of the things that I've been working on is a book that features people who are debunking the stereotypes, and not just within gender, but, you know, with different things. Like, you know, Aja Brown, she's the first female mayor of Oakland, and she's also very young. I think she's the youngest, and she's also African-American. And she's debunking that stereotype of mayors are usually typically white males. You know, I mean, we saw it on a national scope with Hillary Clinton running as the candidate for the Democratic Party. Like her or not, that was a big deal because it's showing that, you know, the presidents or the nominees are not always men. And you have
America is one
like,
of the few countries that really has never had a woman leader.
Oh, yeah.
You look at England,
they certainly
have had any number of women leaders. And any number of other countries have done the same thing. But it's funny when you
South
were talking
America.
About the pink and the blue and knowing the sex of your baby before it's born. I have two older grandchildren who are 28 and 29. Their father got remarried and had a baby, and he had his daughter, my granddaughter that lives with me, come in and paint the room pink with all these little flowers and all this stuff. They had done the sonogram, whatever, and they knew they were having a girl. Well, out popped Larry. Before they came home from the hospital, he had his daughter come back and repaint that room blue. He was not going to let his little baby boy come home from the hospital to a pink room. Now, let's face it, Larry would not have known the difference whether the walls were pink or blue when he was an infant. And he may have never noticed the difference if anybody hadn't made such a big deal out of it. And then, of course, that story got repeated umpteen times. The boy is now, I don't know, 10 or 12 or so. And he can still tell you that he almost came home from the hospital to a pink room, you know. And it's like, what the heck makes the difference what color the walls were? I mean, when we lived in an apartment, when I was born, when my daughter was born, even when my grandchildren were born, I'm willing to bet if you went home to an apartment, every wall was white. You just didn't paint your apartments. You know, I mean, what is the big deal whether that room was pink or blue? But it is also very good to start seeing women in these leading political roles in America because, again, it's breaking that glass ceiling. Here in Baltimore, Maryland, we just had Barbara Mikulski retire from Congress after being there something like 38 years. I mean, when she went into politics, it was unheard of. On top of which, the woman was only 5'1". I mean, she was this little, tiny go-getter, you know. But she broke that ceiling within Congress to be a woman. And then just recently, over the past decade or so, there are African-American women in Congress. And you were saying about you have an African-American mayor, I guess it was, at Oakland. Because we just have had the last two and now the third in a row black African-American mayors in Baltimore. And they've made such a difference in the city. They've really, you know, had some really good programs and partnerships. I think they just have a whole different outlook in terms of making partnerships where a lot of times the men, everything is competitive, compete rather than work together. So it really is good to see the women moving up. So
it is, and you know, I
really, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that a lot of times a big mistake that we do when we're trying to fix these gender differences or these gender inequalities is that we focus on women only. And I think that people forget that equality means equality for all, regardless of how they identify and regardless of sex. And so one of the things that I'm doing different with that book that I'm writing is that I'm including men who are debunking stereotypes, like Benjamin Millipede. I'm not sure how you say his name, but he's married to Natalie Portman. But he is a ballet dancer. And I guarantee you that, number one, a lot of people don't know that. And when you ask most people who are not in the dance world, you know, to name a male who is doing something that's non-traditionally, you know, within the male scope of professions, they don't think right. of things like that, you know. And I think that we need to consciously have that in our minds to have these conversations with children about people, especially people right now who are, you know, in the spotlight, not necessarily in the, you know, entertainment industry, but, you know, when you have somebody within your family who's doing something wonderful, something different than, you know, what we've seen in the past, I think it's important for you to have a conversation with your child and say, hey, you know, Uncle Lou, he didn't follow the traditional family profession of being a police officer. He became a nurse, you know, or, you know, say, for instance, you have somebody with a physical difference, somebody who might be in a wheelchair. A lot of people are kind of, you know, they feel awkward walking up to somebody in a wheelchair. They don't know how to greet them. Something so simple, you know. Sometimes they feel so awkward that they don't even acknowledge the person because they're afraid of, you know, unintentionally saying something wrong. And it's a shame because to avoid that, they just opt not to say a word, which is even worse because you're not acknowledging that human being. And one of the things that I did a long time ago, because I'm a military veteran and my husband is too, so, and he has a lot of, he has some health challenges that have opened my eyes to a whole other world of differences. One good friend of ours lost his legs in Iraq. And he told me about how he went through, you know, like anger and grief and sadness and hopelessness. And now he's just traveling the world, having a great life. He completely debunked that idea of people who have a missing limb can't do anything, or you know, like some people think that they cannot give back to society in a way. But here he is doing all these amazing things that people who don't have challenges like him are not able to do because of mental blocks, you know. But one of the things that I learned, and I thought, gosh, this is so interesting for kids to know. For example, when you have somebody with a missing arm and they have a prosthetic, one of the things that kids should know what to do is that if they extend that arm out to you for a handshake, you go ahead and shake that prosthetic arm. It's no different than having a real one. And you know,
and they do make them nowadays that really do look real. I worked for the Division of Rehabilitation Services for over 30 years, and when I was hired in 1970, we would send a lot of those people home and say, we can't do anything. Fortunately, in the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s, you know, people without an arm are no longer giving this arm with a hook on the end. It actually is a hand, and it does, you know, the fingers move. And I mean, technology has come so far. It is just really wonderful to see. The same way with the artificial legs, they've actually gone to a more thin metal, what we used to call the pirate leg, but it just works so much better. And they don't have to carry around this 10, 15-pound wooden leg that they used to give them. I mean, things have changed so much. And even if they are in a wheelchair, we have had some really good people in some really important positions, including one of our presidents, who was in a wheelchair. They didn't even want anybody to take a picture of him in a wheelchair.
Right, Roosevelt.
No, you can't.
Right.
Yes. You can't let the world see him in a wheelchair. His mind was still okay. His body was what was giving out. And again, it's those kinds of differences that we need to recognize and we need to talk about, even with people with cancer. I happen to have cancer. I happen to be bald. And there are some people that don't even want their kids to talk to me. And it's like, hey, I'm not contagious, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not some kind of monster. I had one little boy who yelled at me that I was a man, and I said, no, I'm a woman. My father said only men are bald. Well,
aww,
you can go home now and tell your father that you met a lady who was bald. You know,
yeah.
I didn't want to say your father's a liar, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't argue with a child.
Right.
But
and
yeah,
I didn't know his father.
Right.
But they are the things, like you said, imprint on these children's minds that then stay there into their teenage years, into their adult years, and that constant discrimination continues because then when they have children, they pass it right along the same as it was passed along to them. And we really do need to change that. It's really a new and changing world out there, that it's just a shame that people can't accept differences. Boys, certainly, like this ballet dancer. I know I had seen a film just recently, interview with Patrick Swayze before he did Dirty Dancing, or it might have been right after he did it. And they were asking him about how he learned to dance. Now, fortunately, his mother was a dancer and a dance teacher, so it was acceptable for him to go and learn to dance. But he said he was still teased by many people that he did all this dancing. It just wasn't what boys did. And
right.
he said it was a great way to meet girls. You know, he
yeah.
thought it was one of the greatest things in the world, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, you have to hope that the child has a strong, independent attitude to see that it is okay. And
right.
it is
and
interesting to see little kids play with each other regardless of race. If you leave them alone and you don't say, hey, he's different, hey, he's African-American, hey, if you let them just go into this playroom together, they play. They do not really notice sometimes the differences. And even if they do notice that we're different, it doesn't matter to them. It's just another little child who has the toy I want to play with or who's playing the game that I want to play. And if we would just let that attitude continue, but no, somehow adults manage to get involved and say, no, no, you can't play with him. He's different. And that's such a shame. It really is. But you also brought up the good point about the handicap, especially with all of our war veterans. They gave a lot, you, your husband, you know, they were over there fighting really to protect us. We've been very fortunate that all these wars have taken place overseas. Yes, we got attacked on 9/11, but we've never really had a big war fought on American soil since the Civil War. We don't have towns that have been bombed and rebuilt and bombed again. And we have to accept the fact that our men and women have come home different, mentally and physically. You mentioned something about you're going to write a book about that?
Yeah, actually, not specifically just about that, but I'm currently writing a book about my military experience to give people an idea of what really to expect, because, you know, there are so many kids out there who want to go ahead and serve their country. There are some that want to do it just for patriotic reasons. Others want to use it as an upward mobility tool, which I think it's smart because you're giving something and getting something in return. And you don't know what to ask. So, you know, I was 17, well, I was 16 actually when I started inquiring into it. And I didn't really know what to ask. And I just had conversations as much as I could with recruiters. Unfortunately, I got one of those batches that were not all that honest. So I went in with this idea that was so just not on par with what the real, you know, military life is. And in a way, I wish I would have known more, because knowing the good and the bad, I'm not going to romanticize anything in my book because I want people to know what it's really like. So, but had I known the good and the bad, it's like it prepares you mentally, because you know that you know you're aware, therefore you chose to do it anyway, and your experience becomes better because you're expecting that, you know. But when you're completely given this romanticized idea of what military service is, then you're kind of devastated. You just don't want to serve anymore. You feel betrayed. And I saw that a lot, you know. Fortunately for me, I just coped with it. I was a little heartbroken about a few things that I just thought were going to be different. But, you know, there is racism in the military. There is, you know, bigotry and misogynistic, you know, experiences that everybody experiences, whether you're male, whether you're female, whether you're from, you know, the States, or whether you were born elsewhere. It's just like the civilian world, but you're in a uniform. And, you know, and yeah, you have limitations as to what you can and cannot do in the military, because, you know, you are, you know, representing the government. But I think that dependents need to know as well, you know, about what to expect as a person who is supporting your fellow service member. And you also need to prepare for after service, because my experience and my husband's experiences are so completely different. You know, like my experience with the veterans healthcare system has been much better. Not to say that I haven't had my challenges, but been so much better compared to my husband's. And, you know, a lot of people have no idea of how one simple request or what, just something so simple can be such a challenge. And I'll give an example of something I'm going through right now. I have been trying to get a hold of the VA just to find out if an appeal was received by them. And I've been going on 3 weeks calling, leaving emails, calling the patient advocate's office, and nobody has returned a call or an email. And they always say, oh, just email it so we can track it. So these are some of the challenges. And I'm not saying that this happens every single time, but in my experience, anything that has to do with my husband's health, it always becomes this challenge, this battle to just get something so simple out of them, you know. I understand that they're overwhelmed.
And you sit down and you say, it shouldn't be this hard.
This hard, yeah.
It really
definitely
should be
mm-hmm.
an easy path. You know, your husband has already gone, served the country. He has unfortunately come home with all these challenges. We need to say to him, thank you for your service. What can we do to help you? What can we do to make your life better? How can we get you back into the mainstream? Is there something,
you know,
that you
yeah.
want to do or that you can do? That's one of the things I loved about the Division of Rehab Services. People would come in the front door and they'd say, oh, I tried that. I got a job. I got fired. Oh, I tried that. I got fired. You need to find out what it is they can do if they're able physically. I know right now my normal energy level is about 4 hours a day, and then I have to take a break. I have to take a nap. I have to recharge. Nobody's going to hire me for a full day, 8 to 10 hour day,
mm-hmm.
if I'm going to take a siesta after lunch. It's one of the few things that has not come to this country from other countries. I would love us to have siesta. I think that's one of the
yeah.
best things that we have not
yeah.
inherited from our foreign folks. But, you
yeah.
know, we need to see, is there something that these folks can do want to do. And then what I loved was when we saw them get ready to leave from whatever program they were in and actually get a job and be able to work, whether it be full-time or part-time or even from home working on the computer and things. So much has changed since I was hired in 1970. I would say probably even since 1980, when we stopped saying to some of these folks, sorry, you have to go home. There's nothing we can do for you. Because now there is so much that, you know, voice activation, turn the lights on, unlock the door, turn the computer on, dictate into the computer. I mean, there are so many things that have changed that are now accessible. And the general public, I don't even think, knows half of what's out there. We used to have, or they still do, I retired, they have what they call a demonstration room in the downstairs of the rehab center where you can go in and try different things, different types of telephones, different types of computers, different types of things even for the kitchen. My husband had an accident last year where ex-husband fell off of a porch and he has what they call an incomplete broken neck. He's in an electric wheelchair.
Wow.
The spoon and fork that he uses has been bent so that his curled fingers can go into this spoon like a little child's spoon so he can get the food to his mouth without dropping it everywhere. I mean, you just don't even think about all these adaptations that are available for people with disabilities. Dolly, it's been really great talking with you. How can people get in touch with you if they want to know more about your Embracing Differences program?
Yeah, they can check out my blog, dalitalks.com, and it's D-A-L-I-T-A-L-K-S. And I'm also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, just, you know, facebook.com/dalitalks with Twitter. And, yeah, if your school is interested or recreation center is interested in the program, send me an email through my website. And I'll be more than happy to work with you. And just one takeaway before I leave is just that that these conversations, I hope that people really do start having these conversations with their children as young as possible, because I think that they're the key to helping us create a more equal generation in the future where we don't have to deal with so much chaos like we are today.
Well,
and,
we
certainly
know
don't focus
that our
on,
children.
Yeah.
Our children are our next generation. But like you said, as early as possible, pre-K or earlier, when these children have to go into a classroom with all kinds of people. We don't have segregated schools anymore. I have to admit, I was one of the lucky ones. I went to school in the 50s, early 50s, and our class was integrated. It was unheard of, but I guess I was just lucky that my class was integrated, my school was integrated. So I didn't see any big problem with sitting next to a black child, an African-American child. Back then we called them blacks.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just another kid in the class, you know. There were two boys, actually. One was much smarter than me, and one was much slower. And he did, unfortunately, fail. But, you know, it was just what was normal for me. I have just really been blessed to have some of that in my background to carry forward. Well, it's not unusual to have, you know. And then when we had the race riots in the 60s, it was like, you've got to be kidding, you know. They live down the street. So what? You know, that doesn't hurt me. They go to my school. So what? They're no different than I am. I never really understood why people were so upset. Even some of the talks that I've done for the American Cancer Society about skin cancer. If you peel our skin off, we're all the same. We all have the same tissue. We have all the same organs. We have, you know, much more in common than we do have in differences. And we need to recognize that. We need to accept that. We all get hurt when things are said, and you can't unsay them. You can say you're sorry, but it doesn't change anything. One of the stories I like to tell is a father used to have his son put a nail in the wooden fence every time he said something that hurt somebody. And then he would make the child go back and say, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you, I didn't mean to hurt you, whatever. And then he got to pull the nail out of the fence. And the father said, but look at the wood. The hole is still there. The impact of what you said is still there.
That's a great story.
So
I'm going to borrow that one. Yeah.
That's fine. I borrowed it from somebody. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, the damage has been done. The other story that a teacher used with my class, I guess it was probably 68, was the father who had the child put a feather on the step of every house where the kid had ever had a fight. And then the next day, the father said, now, I want you to go back. I want you to tell the person you're sorry, and I want you to pick up the feathers. Well, they had had wind all night, and the feathers were all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy said, I can never get them all back. And the father said, that's exactly right. Once you've put that hurtful language out there, it's out there. Same way now with the computer. Once you've put it out there, it's online forever. It just never seems to go away. I don't care how many times you delete, delete, delete. Somebody else has already copied it. Somebody else has already passed it on. It's out there.
Right.
So if you don't want somebody else to share it, don't put it out there. If you don't want to hurt somebody, don't put it out there. Dolly, it has been really great talking with you today. I am really happy to hear that, one, you have this program and that you're really working with teachers and recreation facilities and other groups to really make a difference for the next generation. And then I look forward to these books that you're going to be writing. We'll have to do another radio show about your book whenever it gets done.
Yeah, definitely. I'll let you know. And thank you so much for having me on your show and having this conversation.
You're most welcome. I'm really glad that Catherine Yarbrough has connected us on the networking challenge. And it was a challenge for 21 days to make sure that you didn't miss every day. Now, I have to admit, last Wednesday, I think, was day 21. I managed to do Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then I think it was really just after midnight Monday morning when I was doing Sunday. And I thought, oh, I better hurry up and do Mondays while I'm here because I'll forget. It's a challenge to make yourself do that commitment. And it was only, you know, if you did it, what I call correctly, a few minutes every day. There's no way I could read every single post because I think there were over 1,200 people that had signed up for that, and they were worldwide. And I knew that I wasn't going to be able to keep in touch with some of the people from Australia and wherever. But I really found it challenging to connect with a few people, you being one of them, that really made an impact on how I think and what I do. So I thank you. I'm glad you were there. I'm glad Catherine Yarbrough had the challenge and that, you know, hopefully we'll stay connected and I'll learn more about what you're doing, especially when your books come out. You take care and have a great day. The computer's going to tell me in a minute here that our time is up. You take care and have a great day. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
We have been talking with Dolly Riva, who lives in California here in the U.S., and she has developed Embracing Differences. And she talks about it on her blog, and you can find her blog at dalitalks.com. And she has a lot of different things about gender differences, about race differences, about physical differences, all kinds of things that sometimes we just have this subliminal thing in our brain that may have been passed on to us in childhood. Something as simple as if a baby is born and it's a girl, it has to have pink balloons. If it's a boy, it has to have blue. Well, maybe their favorite color is really yellow. We don't know because it's still an infant, but we already have this preconceived idea that if there are pink balloons hanging out the car window, you know they've had a baby girl. These are stereotypes. These are some discriminatory actions that we have been doing for years, probably will continue to do for years. But also the fact that there was a young boy, 4 years old, in kindergarten, wanting to play in the kitchen, and already the kids, the little boys, were teasing him that the kitchen was a girl's playground, play area. Boys are allowed to play in the kitchen. Boys are allowed to learn to cook and clean. As I mentioned during the show, some of the best chefs in the world are men. So we really need to look at equality. What do the boys want to do? Do they want to be this big, husky construction guy, or do they want to be a ballet dancer? We need all kinds of positions for boys, all kinds of acceptable things for girls. And we really need to learn language and actions that really follow that model. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey here on Blog Talk Radio. I will be back on the air again tomorrow with Pat Matson, which is another lady I met in that networking group, and we're going to find out what Pat's story is. I believe one of her passions is also writing, so it should be an interesting conversation. Here on Blog Talk Radio, Anna's Journey, we'll travel wherever Anna wants to travel, on any topic that Anna wants to travel to, talk about, and hopefully hear from the listeners that these are things that you want to hear about, that you've enjoyed the show, that you've contacted the guest. Any kind of feedback that you want to give me would be greatly appreciated. You can go to my website, www.annarenault.com. And that's A-N-N-A-R-E-N-A-U-L-T, AnnaRenault.com. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great day.